We're talking with Dr. Melba Ketchum about an amazing and potentially significant study of Bigfoot DNA. And I know you've got a lot of questions for her. We'll get to those calls right after this on Coast to Coast. Dr. Ketchum, one other quick question from me, and then we go to the phone lines. It deals with Native Americans. I'd asked you a little bit ago about whether or not the mitochondrial DNA, the human DNA from the mother's side, was from a Native American. You said not necessarily. This question is less scientific and more of an impression, but I wonder if you could address the perceived connection of Native Americans to Bigfoot, Sasquatch, whatever name you want to use. Dave Politis had concentrated on this, the special relationship that the special reverence that Native American tribes have for Bigfoot, that they seem to have some kind of communication over the centuries with them. Any thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. If you go, you can go to a number of sources. The tribal peoples have names for the Sasquatch, and they've lived in harmony with them, you know, for as long as they've been here. So I think that they live closer to the earth, I think, than a lot of mainstream America does. Their belief systems have been somewhat different as far as respect for other living creatures and respect for the land. And they have stories that go back, you know, hundreds and, you know, probably more than 1,000 years of coexisting with these beings. And I think that a lot can be learned from them. They don't discuss it a lot. Most of them have respect for them. There's a couple of tribes that have a more negative opinion, but out of the many, many, many tribes in this country and in Canada, they just have a quiet coexistence, and they're not out to prove it. They know it.
Do you
a really good relationship, and I think that everybody else would do good to actually emulate such a relationship, just
meaning,
you know,
like
a live and let live relationship.
Meaning like no going out and trying to gun one down.
Oh, absolutely. I think somebody should be charged with murder if they do that. I mean, it would be as bad as killing a human. It's a terrible thing.
Are there samples, or can you say, are there samples submitted by Native Americans or from tribal lands or reservations?
For the most part, no, because they know they exist. They're not out to prove anything like everybody else. They just, like I say, they live with them. Most, you know, from what I understand, and from people that are more closely related than I am to the different tribes, that some of them even have areas set aside for them to live in peace in. It's a whole different world in the way that it's handled with the American Indians. I think it's something, like I say, that we should really admire how they handle it. I mean, they're not, you know, freaked out by it. They're not out to prove something. They're just, you know, they share the land like we've always done, whether we know it or not.
Yeah. Let's take some calls. I would remind our callers there are some limits on what our guest, Dr. Ketchum, can say about the study itself, but I think she'll probably do as much as she can to accommodate your questions, your inquiries. Let's go to somebody down in your neck of the woods, Melba, east of the Rockies, Glenn in Texas. Hi, Glenn.
Good morning, George, doctor.
Good morning.
Morning.
You're a breath of fresh air. As a doctor, as a devotee of the scientific method, I know you're interested in the truth. But I have a bit of a problem with the people you're dealing with. Now, a lot of these people make their living, and there's big, big money behind it, make their living pulling the wool over people's eyes. And as scientists, you really don't look for that, do you? I mean, you're interested in the truth, but that's really not my question. My question is that could these samples be possibly cultured on either a living human or in a laboratory, say a hair follicle from a relatively unknown mammal, a pine marten, a wolverine, be implanted in a human, follicle cells grow before being rejected, or a skin graft, or in a laboratory?
That's an interesting question, Glenn. Dr. Ketchum?
Well, these samples obviously are not that, and most of the submitters are not the people you're talking about. The people you're talking about avoid me like the plague and are my critics. A lot of people that were involved in the study are individuals. And there are, you know, three or four groups, but almost, I mean, the majority of the samples were, you know, submitted not necessarily by these big groups that are going out after it. You know, I mean, I'll give an example. We don't have anything from BFRO in our study. We, you know, our study has been very careful in that way. We don't want to deal with people that, you know, have impropriety behind them. The other thing is the type of samples, they could not have been cultured because their hair that has been obviously weathered as far as normal wear and tear for something that's outside, it's you know, got natural ends that haven't been cut. You know, I mean, it's just no way they're cultured cells.
And they're from all over the place. I mean, I would think it'd be hard for somebody, let's say, if they could pull off something like that with a lab, how do they get these samples all over the country and to be submitted?
Oh, for sure. I mean, yeah. You know, every sample, and the other thing is all these samples behave the same. So when you have a repetition, you know, with scientific method, you pretty well can guarantee that you're not getting a hoax when you have a lot of different submitters and from all over North America, including Canada. And plus, it just wouldn't be feasible to, I mean, it's a very good question, but, you know, it didn't happen here.
Sort of following up on that, is it possible that you've got the human side of the DNA, and that evidence you say is pretty clear. The unknown factor, you don't know what a Bigfoot DNA looks like, so you've got a great big unknown. Could it be some animal that just hasn't been sequenced?
No, because your animals aren't going to have human mitochondrial DNA.
Right. Yeah, a human didn't mate with a wolverine.
For species ID, that's how this whole thing started.
A good point. Jack, west of the Rockies, Jack in Portland. Good morning, Jack.
Yeah, good morning. I'm having, it's kind of frustrating to listen to this, because I'm hearing one thing and then I'm hearing another. It's like listening to anecdotal evidence. Most scientific studies are preceded by an abstract about what it is that you're talking about. And I really haven't heard specifically who, what, when, where these, what these samples are that you're talking about.
Well, I'd have to disagree with you, Jack, because we said it was hair and skin samples from more than 100 of them from all over the country.
What specifically distinguishes them from normal human DNA? What is it that you're looking at?
Okay, fair enough. I think we covered some of that, but Melba, I think it's a good opportunity for you to clarify it.
Okay. You know, when you do a whole genome, you look at, it has everything in it. It has mitochondrial DNA. It also has, you know, your base nuclear sequences too. It's all the DNA that's been in a cell, basically. And, you know, when you're able to tell then if it's something novel, because there's depositories in GenBank is, you know, probably the biggest, where everybody, all the scientific community deposits their sequences, and you're able to compare it against that, and you get something that's not been ever seen before. And I mean, there are thousands and thousands of different DNA sequences from different animals and what have you. So, I mean, we know what we've got is novel, yet, you know, we can pull out the human mito. So, I mean, there's no doubt, you know, what we're doing. I can't go into just huge detail on this. I've probably said more than I even should as it is, because we are trying to leave the actual data and the actual findings you know, how it was all came about and where it all came from for the paper, because, you know, we're treading on dangerous ground after the leak anyway.
Yeah, Jack, I can understand your frustration, and I appreciate the call, but we've tried to cover, I don't know if you've heard the entire show, but we've tried to cover sort of the basic reasons about why some of the detail has been withheld. That would include an abstract, but I hope we've covered enough bases so you have a better understanding of it. First-time caller Jim in West Virginia. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, George, Doctor.
Hi.
I've heard the whole program, and one thing hit me pretty quick on, and that would be if the Bigfoot has any sort of a family type structure. One reason the dead one has not been found is they possibly bury their dead.
Well, that's an interesting point. Do you happen to know anything about that, Melba?
Well, the only thing I know is on that is secondhand from habituators who say they do bury them.
Jim, anything else?
That would stand the reason to me. And just one other thought I had. I hope this paper comes out fairly quick, because the quicker it comes out, the quicker law enforcement can write legislation about hunting the Bigfoot and make it a serious, serious crime.
Well, you're absolutely right on that, and I think we're all on the same page. Let me ask it a different way, Melba. Have you had any, other than law enforcement, have you had any government interest? Have you had any kind of agencies that have said, hey, what are you up to, gave you a call or tried to peek in and see what you're doing?
I had one incident, but I don't know that it was government. You know, we had somebody sitting outside the lab that shouldn't have been. We caught them, and they drove off in a hurry. But other than that, you know, there's been no intervention of any sorts that I'm aware of, unless it's going on way behind the scenes, you know, on a journal level or something. But, I mean, I don't think so. I think that the government is actually ready for this to come out. I mean, we've had, I mean, there's actually a video for one of the agencies on YouTube about where to look for Sasquatch, and there's some other things that I haven't been able to verify. That was verified as coming from a government agency. There's also, you know, been on the internet a very official looking, you know, kind of an information sheet for, you know, if you encounter one. And if that is indeed true, I mean, I think they're preparing, you know, for the release. I'm sure they know what's going on. I'm not trying to hide it. I would welcome the government to support it, actually, because it's going to come out. And if somebody kills one and they don't have any more information than that, you know, good information that you can get from people that are actually around these individuals, you know, it could be kind of a fiasco. And, you know, I would hope that they would take an interest in this coming out the right way. You know, there's a lot of politics that could be involved in this, as far as, you know, people don't want to have land set aside for them. You don't need that. They've lived under our noses all this time and haven't needed land. The only thing that the Sasquatch needs is protection from human beings. That is the only thing they need, because they're doing fine like they are, except for all the people out, you know, trying to hunt them and kill them and, you know, flush them out so they could see them and, you know, harassing them in general. I think that we need to leave them alone. There's ways to research and learn about them without being invasive and without putting them under a microscope. You can do it in a lot of ways that's very healthy. And, you know, I mean, I kind of say like the Jane Goodall approach. That seems to be, you know, the safest way. And there's people that have those kind of interactions. And we're actually working to try to, you know, combine a lot of that research data blindly from the different ones and therefore have a way to help people learn about them without hurting them and without harming them and without harassing them. There's ways.
So many TV shows, you know, and I understand it. I understand that there's a lot of public interest and that, of course, TV would reflect that. Folks out there in the woods making noises and trying to attract them and get some evidence. I understand it. But And maybe it's a good thing in the long run is that more people have an appreciation for it, then the more prepared we'd be for the kind of news that you're going to drop on us, and the more protective we might be toward them as a species.
Right. The problem I have with media in general is they demonize them and they make them look like monsters. And admittedly, when you see something that's so large and you know, it's intimidating, but, you know, the flip side, I mean, they're like people. There's good ones, there's bad ones. And, you know, but most of them, I mean, most every one of them that, you know, I know that, you know, people have been around, most of it is just an intimidation. If they don't want you around, they'll kind of escort you out. But, you know, there's not a huge amount of damage done by them. And I think that, you know, people need to not demonize them and make them look like monsters. That just makes my blood boil.
I know I would go to the phones, but I don't want to cut somebody off before we go to the break here. One quick question dealing with numbers. I've seen this on Bigfoot websites and things that they estimate how many there might be out there. Some in the neighborhood of 15,000, which is, you know, another reason why you might not find bones or remains so easily. When you compare that to the number of bears, for example, it might be 20 or 30 times that many. Do you have any idea on the numbers?
Oh, it's in the thousands. There's no doubt about that. It's a pretty large population. They're just so good at hiding that, you know, I liken it to like a special forces soldier. I've said this before, and, you know, if they're in full camo and they're good at what they do, you could probably walk within a foot of them in the woods and never see them. Well, that's how these guys are. And, you know, you're not going to see them unless they want to be seen or unless it's just kind of a fluke. So, you know, the numbers are vastly underestimated.
But, I mean, underestimated, is 15,000 a reasonable number?
I think
or you're just
more than that.
And they're everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Everywhere. There's been reports in all 50 states and all of Canada. Only Hawaii is the only state in the union that has not had a report.
And I wonder why not Hawaii. Well, I guess, you know, there's only so many indigenous species there. It'd be and so much land. I don't know. Any thoughts on why not Hawaii?
Well, it's pretty isolated. It's an island in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I just think that for whatever reason that species hasn't made there. But, I mean, who's to say they're not there and they're just stealthy enough they haven't been seen? I've not... When I've been to Hawaii, I haven't had the mind to look for any type of a field research on Bigfoot, that's for sure.
Me neither. Every time I go, I think, how can I make a living and stay here?
There you go. It's beautiful there.
All right. A lot of folks on the phones. I don't want to take a call now, and we'll have to cut it off in the middle. Let me ask you this, Melbo. If you hear the music, we're out of time for this break. Have you taken it far enough? And I ask that in this way. You mentioned about the need for supercomputers. I know there are, you know, billions, I guess, of moves you can make in terms of sequencing the genome. And do you see yourself as sort of a starting point, a platform for others to pick it up? Or is this enough to make the case?
Oh, that's definitely enough to make the case. There's no doubt in my mind or any of my co-authors' mind that we've got it. But, you know, just to, you know, I look for it to hopefully have a positive effect in the future, maybe for human medicine, because they are closely related, that perhaps, you know, some good medical type of findings can be done where maybe some gene therapy or you know, there's all kinds of possibilities in this day and age where, you know, a comparison to another living hominid could have very positive implications for the future of human medicine, among other things. So, you know, that's one of the desires of my heart because medicine is the core of who I am. My degree's in medicine, so.
Well, you'd hate to have one of them end up in a medical lab, though.
Oh, no. I mean, but with genomes, you've already got the basis right there. I mean,
right.
It's, you know, it's not like you have to have more than that.
Time for us to take a break. We'll come back with more of your calls, as many as we can get to. We're going to go back to our conversation with Dr. Melba Ketchum about Bigfoot DNA, and I promise we'll get to as many of your calls as we can here on Coast to Coast AM. And here we go, wildcard line, Dan in DeWitt, Iowa. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. Up until about 3 hours ago, I wasn't worried about the species, but I'm afraid after what I've heard that to think that everybody and their brother's not going to be out there looking for them may be a little Pollyannish, and I hope people do leave them alone. And my question is, are they closer to humans or to animals? And have they decided consciously not to evolve, or are they incapable of evolving?
Interesting. Melba?
Well, there's all different opinions on that. The habituators, in general, say they're quite evolved. I've had enough. One unique thing about being in this position is I've been able to hear from people that have approached me because of me doing this study. And, I mean, there's credible people out there that have amazing experiences. So I think they're a lot more human than we think. That's just my opinion, based on a lot of conversations with people that don't even know each other.
I guess, is there a way to scientifically determine closer to human or closer to something else, or is it right down the middle?
Oh, no, as far as that, there's still a lot of analysis to do to get an actual percentage. And just, once again, just because the sequences are different, it doesn't mean that they're that far removed mentally or emotionally from us. So, you know, the DNA, I mean, you can literally get an alignment score, which I'm not going to talk about right now, as far as how much sequence is, you know, how it aligns with human exactly. We have that information, but, you know, as far as the species in itself, the way that they behave and the different things that, you know, I've learned about them, I mean, they're a type of people, in my opinion.
Thank you, Dan. Linwood in Jefferson, Texas, on the wild card line. Good morning, Linwood.
Good morning, George. My question is, well, twofold. Number one, does Dr. Ketchum have samples of both genders of this creature? And number two, being some type of hybrid, is it able to reproduce? Because, like, I know, like, for instance, like a donkey and a horse produces a mule which can't reproduce, or a cross between a lion and a tiger. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you.
Okay, as far as the hybridization, there's been a lot of reports and some fairly well-documented reports of them in the last century or so mating with humans. So, obviously, assuming those reports might have some credibility, especially there's a real famous report in Russia where a young female was captured, and the story of Zaina and Quit, her son, her hybrid son, it's on the internet. It's been, you know, well researched, and even some DNA done from those, and of course it turned out human because it was mitochondrial DNA. But there's a lot of eyewitnesses, some that lived up into, you know, one was 100 years old and gave a statement, and she was alive when, and actually saw this individual and described her and told stories. And they were backed up over the years by the townspeople. So, I mean, she lived in this town and kind of like a slave, more or less. So people can go read that account. There's other accounts out there, too, some in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest, with some of the American Indians in that area. They have stories of hybridization.
He is also asking about samples from
both
male
genders. And
both genders. Okay, appreciate the call, Linwood. David in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Good morning, David.
Good morning, George. Dr. Ketchum, great show. Appreciate your efforts. My question, you answered my first one effectively, as if you had ever been threatened by any government agency not to release this. But my real interest here tonight is, and my question is, Dr. Ketchum, do you personally believe, or have you heard from any Native Americans, that the so-called Bigfoot has any alien connections? If this is true, this animal has extraordinary abilities to evade technology.
Well, that's not really science, so I can't really address that. There's lots of stories out there, but you know, we're not going to go there, because that's not part of the scientific study per se, and it doesn't have to do with, you know, cultural or natural aspects of them. So you know, we don't really want to go there.
appreciate the call anyway, David. I guess, you know, it'd be speculative, but you've already sort of touched on a little bit, is that their ability to evade humans seems to be innate.
There'd be a lot of motivation to the media to discredit these studies, and that's my, there seems to be something more there, and I just don't know what it is. It's extraordinary.
Well, no argument here. Thanks for the call, David. Appreciate it. Joe in the Bronx. How you doing, Joe?
Yes. Hi, George. How are you?
Okay.
Dr. Ketchum, I wanted to ask, first of all, how far back would the oldest artifact of Sasquatch or Bigfoot date to? And what do you believe is the purpose of this species existing on our planet?
Okay, first of all, you're talking about artifacts. You're talking about, like, in ancient art, because that goes back before Christ.
But I'd say actual bone or specimen.
Oh, our specimens are fresh, so they're contemporary. We do have some bones, but we have not dated them. We're more concerned with the DNA to see if they really are Sasquatch bones. Mm-hmm. And like I say, we've just started on those.
Purpose of the species. I don't know if you can even tackle that one.
Well, the only thing I know is from the American Indians have oftentimes talked about that they appear in times when the world is in trouble, when I say the world, we're talking about, you know, their tribes have been in trouble. They come as harbingers of, you know, get yourself straight. And this is just lore. Now, this has nothing to do with me. It's just what I've read and been told, that, you know, they oftentimes are helpful and, you know, kind of watch over the tribes. At least that seems to be the belief of a lot of the tribes. So, you know, it's speculative, but that's what I know on the subject.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it. Edward here in Las Vegas on a wild card line. Hi, Edward.
Hello, neighbor George. I'm not Bigfoot, so you're safe.
Okay.
Okay. Dr. Ketchum, I assume your PhD field is genetics?
No, I'm actually a veterinarian, but I've been in the field of genetics since 85.
Okay, so you got a few years of background on it, yeah. About the hair, how is it harvested? Is it something that is found where the creature has rubbed against trees or something like that? Or?
Some is, but for the most part, a lot of them came from eyewitnesses where they, you know, would see, and then they would see us, and they would have a sighting, and they would go down and where the individual touched something and look around, and they would find the hair. You know, there's one that is in Dave Pilates' book that we have hair from that, you know, it actually even had in police involvement and.
There's
a lot of eyewitness accounts of things that we have done here as far as, you know, the hair. It's as close to chain of custody as we can get. Let's put it that way.
Is the hair black or brown or what color?
Oh, it's all different colors. I mean, they're individuals. They definitely lots of different colors.
Okay, well, can we conclude that they're more civilized than we are because there are no guns or wars or
massacres? kind of a judgment call there, Edward. Thank you, though. You can reach your own conclusion on that. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. East of the Rockies, Chip in Raleigh, North Carolina. Good morning, Chip.
Thank you very much, George, for taking my call today. I'll try to make it quick. I know you guys are getting through as many as you can. I think the main problem here that Melba has run into is that there are a lot of researchers out there that tend to want to protect their product, and I'll call it a product because that's what it is. When you had your information leaked and the individuals tried to take 2/3 of the profits from any documentary and all that kind of thing, why not out these individuals? Last week they had Lauren Coleman on here openly talking about you, Melba. I don't see a problem with outing these individuals who are out here trying to bash you, because I know that they're trying to protect their product. And George, questions for you. Why not hook her up with some of Bigelow's scientists? And I'll take my answer off the call.
Melba, why don't you go first?
Well, I choose to take the high road. you know, talking about people is just not my way. You know, it would lower me to their level. I refuse to do that. I'm not that person. And, you know, the people that are in the know who these individuals are. And, you know, it's just not my way. I'm not going to play tit for tat with these people. My gosh. You know, this has nothing to do with them. They're just things that got in the way along the road.
As for hooking her up with scientists associated with Bob Bigelow, I'll just answer it this way, is that so far Melba's the only person who's identified by name with the study, and we'll leave it at that. I'm sure that the names of those who are working with her will come out at some point once the paper is released, or whether after the data is released itself. Thanks, Chip. Thanks for the call. West of the Rockies, Pete in Chico, California. Hi, Pete.
How are you doing tonight?
Okay.
Good. Hey, I'm calling. I've been blessed to hike a lot in the Mill Creek area, which is the southernmost Mount Lassen, the southernmost mountain in the Cascade Range. And I believe it is full of this species that we're talking about. And I've unfortunately contracted Morgellons disease and or Bartonella's disease and some other parasitic issues that actually a veterinarian probably understands more than anyone in the MD or Western medicine class would understand. And I'm interested to ask if they believe that or Melba believes that there's any shared parasites that might be that cross over from human possibly to Bigfoot or vice versa.
Well, I would say that there's a very high possibility it could, because they are very similar to us and they share some of our DNA.
Right. So, I've just
you know, there is, and you know, if the reports are true that they can actually mate with us, then definitely there's that possibility. And you know, it can't be confirmed. I mean, of course, you know, it comes back to more testing and more samples to determine things like this. But I would not be surprised.
Sure, sure. Well, it's an interesting, I've been seeking and trying to get answers. And frankly, I've got more answers from the veterinarian, UC Davis, and other areas of research. For at least what I'm suffering from, that's more animal species, and that's what's brought me about the conversation tonight, and considering that possibly I might have entered an area that was somehow infected by the presence of a Bigfoot or what have you, and either drinking the water or just sharing, sitting in a spot that possibly the animal might have sat in as well. So, anyway.
There was some discussion of this with one submitter that there was an outbreak that, you know, that particular researcher feels came from them, you know, the people, and it was a water supply. So, you know, I mean, we don't know that for sure. I mean, but once again, it's obviously not all that common because of the fact that, you know, more people would be ill from being in the woods, but I'm not going to say it can't happen.
Pete, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. First-time caller, JR in North Carolina. Hi.
Hey, awesome question. I'll take it off the air. Yeah,
okay.
I think if you asked 100 people, you know, are there Bigfoots, probably 95 would say no. And I hate to be skeptical or whatever, but, you know, why hasn't, you know, all the people hunting these creatures and all the people that have looked for them actually taken one in captivity? I know the doctor said that they hide well and, you know, whatever, but you would think in all these years there would be one body discovered or one captured, and you could go, here it is, and then the case is over. I'll take it off the air. Thanks.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think, you know, I'm not sure that everyone would still believe in if he had the body, but, and I would disagree with the 95 out of 100 would say, no, they don't exist. I don't know if there'd been surveys, but I'll bet it's closer to the middle. But, Melba?
Well, you know, once again, we're dealing with something that has a lot of intelligence as well as instincts from living in the wild. And I just really believe that they're just that good at evading us. I think there have been, there's been a lot of reports of bodies, a lot of conspiracy theory having to do with the bodies. All you have to do is go online and start Googling, and you can see all kinds of body reports. But at this point, you know, for whatever reason, they've not been allowed to either be shown or come forward, or, you know, it's just not true what's out there. But I'm quite sure that they can, you know, evade for a large extent, to the point that you know, you just aren't going to get that many. It's going to be a fluke if the body turns up.
But it's a fair question and a fair point, JR. Point taken. Try to get one more call in on our wild card line. Wade in Alberta, Canada. Hi, Wade.
Hello. I'll try and make this quick.
Okay.
It was quite a number of years ago. I was driving down a country road in a pretty wild area around Alberta, and I stopped to check tires, and I got out, and I was walking around my vehicle, and up on a hill behind me, I saw a shaded figure. It wasn't a horse, it wasn't a moose, and it wasn't a bear, but I could see the hair blowing in the breeze, and the sunlight was behind it, so I couldn't tell exactly what it was, but it had long hair, and I wish I had had a camera, but I was pretty young at the time, and I didn't carry one. Anyway, just an experience I wanted to relate.
Thank you, Wade. And there are so many people out there. I mean, I wonder if there's any way to put a number on it, how many people in North America have had experiences or sightings.
Well, there's thousands in some of the websites of these different groups, research groups. And, you know, I mean, and like I say, just the sheer numbers that have come forward wanting to talk to us since we came out with the press release, that, I mean, you know, there's just literally thousands and thousands and thousands of people that have had a sighting of some sort.
Are you collecting them all these accounts?
Oh, no. Well, oh, yeah, actually we are. We're you know, we're going to address them once this is out.
Well, Melba, I wish you the best of luck.
Names and numbers, and
right.
We're going to try to hook them up in kind of a support group, too, because, you know, people need to talk about this and not be suppressed and scared to talk about it. And, you know, I mean, we had one person that went to tears. They cried. They were so relieved to be able to talk to us and have somebody that would listen and not laugh at them and not make fun of them.
Or, yeah, that they're not crazy necessarily.
Right, exactly.
Melba, best of luck to you. I appreciate you talking to us about the study within certain parameters, and I hope you'll consider coming back when you can say more.
Oh, I will. I'll be glad to.
And this is just the beginning, I would assume. There's a lot more work to be done.
Oh, and a lot more to talk about.
analysis. I mean, you've got a lot of stuff. You've got results, but you've got a lot of analysis to do to figure out what it all means, don't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's years of analysis to be done. Really amazing amount of analysis that's going to have to be done.
Well, after it comes out, and hoping for the best with your paper, I hope you'll write a book about it as well, and maybe one of those documentary folks.
On it.
Okay. Dr. Melba Ketchum, thanks very much. Appreciate
it. Thank you, George. Nice being with you.
You too. And thanks also to Trevor Paglin, who was our guest earlier, Nathan Staten, Will Wilkerson, Lex Lonehood, Dan Galante, and all my friends and colleagues there at Premier Radio. We want to say Merry Christmas, everyone, from all of us here at Coast to Coast. Hope you have a great holiday. I'll be back next month. Good night.